Remember the first time you saw a race car on an open trailer? Maybe it was full of dirt, tire marks, and other battle scars. You wondered where it had been, and more importantly, where it was going next. Every open trailer has a story, and we're here to tell it. Welcome to the Open Trailer Podcast.
It is stage number three of Beech Ridge Motor Speedway Hall of Fame member, nine-time track champion, and also Maine Motorsports Hall of Famer, class of 2017, quite possibly a future analyst at Fox News as well. Mr. Michael Maietta Sr. is on the program this week. Obviously, I'm kidding about the Fox News thing, but, you know, if you listen to stages one and two and you thought they were completely different interviews, it may have seemed that way. Your feedback, I heard a lot of that this weekend. You're not alone for thinking that, but no, they were from the same, you know, the same afternoon that we recorded in his house. And it's funny, we did talk a lot of racing stuff in stage number two, like the Richie Evans stuff. I mean, imagine if that day in history had never happened, where Richie Evans and Mike Maietta had formed a friendship, and Richie's watching him practice and says, you know what, loosen up on the steering wheel. And then he does, and he goes and wins nine track championships. Would that have happened without that day? You know, it's just different cool little nuggets that we learn on the podcast. And then stage one was entertaining. You know, it's funny, I heard both sides. A lot of people enjoyed it, some didn't. And all I can say is I'm not the one who said it. You know, it's funny when things are said on the show, I hear it. Obviously, that makes sense because I'm sort of I'm the host. But I didn't say, you know, if you have a problem with the things that are said on the podcast and I didn't say them, possibly go to the person who did. That's just how it is, though. It's kind of like a driver who is being cheered and booed at the same time. You know, at least they're making noise. At least you care. And that's the most important thing. So if you thought that about stages one and two, you're not alone. I heard that feedback over the weekend. There was a ton of racing. I was a part of it. And, you know, I was reinvigorated a couple of times this weekend. The weekend started at Thompson Speedway for the World Series. I was part of the Modified Racing Series portion of it. And, you know, I love those guys. I know the Modified Racing Series has certainly taken its lumps the last couple of years. I didn't really know what to expect when I signed on to help out John Spence for the, this is the second gig in a row that I've taken to work with the guy. And, you know, John's health issues have prevented, you know, that co-announcing thing from happening. And I'm happy to have, you know, picked up the mantle for him this year and got to know some of the competitors. There is not a bad person in that bunch. They are super, super approachable. I got to tell you, you know, I mean, I obviously love doing this, but I don't always love doing it. And one of the hardest parts of the job is cold calling people, is meeting new people is hard in life. It just because you get too inside yourself. And I completely understand that everybody's different and not everybody feels the way I do. But I think some people might where I'm much better at it than I used to be. You know, 20 years ago, I had a reputation for, and rightfully so, the people who said, you know, this directly to my face were correct in saying, yeah, but you only talk to the people that you know. And I took that personally. No, I actually did. But they weren't wrong. And that had nothing to do with the fact that I never liked other people. It was just my comfort zone. As a, I wouldn't say introvert, because introvert or introversion or whatever the word is, you know, that's just another form of ego. Introverts generally are more concerned about themselves and how others view them, so they decide to stay kind of out of the spotlight, and it's easy to say that you're an introvert that puts a blanket on things. But it's really just another form of being self-centered. I know that's kind of a deep dive, and sometimes I do that on the podcast, but so I don't think I'm one of those. It's just I'm just generally nervous around people that I don't know. And I've never really gotten over it. And I know part of that's ego. It's probably all ego, if I really break it down. So anyway, point being, some people are harder to meet than others because, you know, it's not like I'm a mechanic and I know all the things about race cars, quite the opposite. Anybody who knows me knows that. So to go continuously to a new team or new individual time and time again for the last couple of years has not been the easiest part of the job. And I haven't always enjoyed it. That has nothing to do with the people that I've met. 95% of them have been excellent, accommodating, and all that. But to go into a place where, like, nobody goes to the racetrack to talk to the race announcer, right? When you're at the racetrack, you're laser focused and you want to win that race. And then here comes this bozo in a polo shirt and he's like, hey, man, let's make small talk for 5 minutes. I get that. You know, it's out of your comfort zone. I'm doing it to learn a little bit about you so I can talk to the fans about it. And it's a necessary part of the job. And it's not always easy. Meeting Modified Racing Series guys this year, this is called the Open Trailer Podcast. Their trailers were wide open. And there's some stars in there, too. You know, you have all different personalities from young guys like Jacob Perry to, you know, 71-year-old George Sherman, who goes to work every day at his body shop and just loves life. You know, we've had a lot of talks about that. Then the champion, Kirk Alexander, the iRacing guy, Ian Arelli. Kevin's an awesome guy. I didn't see him every week, but, you know, he was very, very, you know, they just take the time to let you do your job to help build their stories. And that's not to disparage anybody else. I think it's worth saying Modified Racing Series was super fun to work. The fact that we had a big championship battle between two titans, like Matt Swanson, another awesome dude, and Kirk Alexander, right? And there had been some story building that had happened earlier in the summer, and to be able to bring that to the fans, I mean, I just felt like it was on fire. You know, and there was some drama in that race, and it was heads. No one knew who was the champion at the end of the race. It was wild, and it reminded me that I really still, loved that part of my life. The other side of it was being at LST Motorsport Park on Sunday. Now, Steve Perry gave me a call like in April, and you know, anybody that's in racing and commits to a schedule, it's like, well, you know, you talk in April about what you're doing till October. But sometimes your life is completely different in October than it was when you made those plans in April. And I can certainly fall into that category on a couple of different levels. But he, he said, hey, so how about giving back? And I'm like, yes, absolutely. You know, without karting's where I got my start at Beechridge. And without Joe Pastore, I'll never forget it, Joe Sr., getting out of his car, G-Hop, in 1993 and shaking my hand and saying, let's do this and let's learn together, this podcast wouldn't happen. You know, the Beechridge thing probably would have never happened. You know, we wouldn't know each other, you and I. We wouldn't. I don't think so. Yeah, everything. I wouldn't say everything like radio-wise, but I would say certainly everything racing-wise. You know, like I will always hold immense gratitude for that family taking a chance on a guy who just said he still doesn't like meeting people. Can you imagine 18-year-old me? And karting. Karting was just, you know, where I was at in the 90s. And the kids that were racing then now have children, and their kids are racing. And it's very poetic to say, full circle stuff. But man, didn't I feel it. I don't have children of my own. I don't really have a family. And that doesn't mean I don't get excited about what I see happen in the eyes of others. And to see the wide-eyedness and the families that are building memories that will be there for decades. These are lifelong memories they're making. And to be a part of that, just to go back to where it all began, not even for myself, but just to watch the start of racing careers and the promise again was just so gratifying. I knew it would be going into it, but to see it in the flesh was, I couldn't stop smiling driving all the way home. It was, it's an experience that I'm not going to forget for a long time. And, I certainly hope it will be an annual thing. Anyway, that, again, another deep dive. Sorry about that. Do I owe you $75 for this therapy session? I hope not. This week we get to Mike Maietta, and you know, we talked about how you know, Mike was one way in stage one and then another way in stage two. This is kind of a combination of that. He gets real philosophical, too, when he talks about his drive and things that make him tick. I didn't expect it. I threw it out there, and he answered. And sometimes that's what you have to do. You never know what kind of answer you're going to get. So extremely thankful for Mike and his time. Let's get right to it. It's stage number three of Open Trailer Podcast. Mike Maietta, enjoy. Back to Beechridge in the early 90s, you know, you're still racking up wins, racking up championships. You know, one of the guys that you're really racing with. Tell me about racing with the Babs and the Billadoos.
Great people. Billadoo. Fantastic people. All of them. All of them.
Did you ever race with Rick or just Bub? I said Billadoos, plural.
I don't remember. Rick was in the modifieds, and I think that was before I was.
Yeah, that's why
I didn't know Rick as good as I did Bub.
Yeah.
But the Babs, they're great people. They're fantastic people. You couldn't ask for better people. You couldn't. I can't think of anybody. I've met such wonderful people in racing that it takes away from the dubs that I don't care about. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I don't even think about them simpletons. I met so many great people, I don't even have time to think about the people that sit up there and boo you and give you the finger and...
Yeah, because that happened a lot with
you. A lot, yeah. Richie Evans, it did to him, too. Richie says it don't matter. It's another thing he helped me with. He goes, it doesn't matter if they're booing you or cheering you. Your job, when you show up at a racetrack, is to let them know you're there. Mm-hmm. He goes, you want to hear noise. It don't matter what it is. You want them to know you're there.
Yeah.
And I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. Not in a good way. And
did
I was...
In your early career, did it bother you that people were
at first, but then after talking to Richie and going to different races and listening to him boo in the Cup Series, they boo Jeff Gordon, they boo the, you know what I mean? It's just, I'm used to it. My whole life's been like that, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it don't bother me now, but it did when I first started. Because I never did nothing to nobody. And most of these morons that are up there booing and doing all the stuff they're doing don't even know you.
Yeah.
They've never even met you.
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool in a way, though, that you can have haters.
Yeah.
See, you know, you can have people that you disagree with, but you're famous when you have haters because they don't know who you are.
They don't.
But yet they have all of this opinion about you.
Yeah,
it's just weird.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're famous, when you have haters.
That's what Richie told me, so it never bothered me after that. But I think it bothered my parents.
Mm. You know? They didn't want you to race either.
No, they didn't want me racing anyway.
Which I think is just a weird thing to hear because, you know, you see the family name so synonymous with paving at Beechridge or at least digging it up, you know, the car, multiple cars at the racetrack, the illusion that there was a ton of money behind all of this.
And there wasn't.
That you were just the driver in a family-supported thing. They've certainly supported you over the course of time, but... Initially, they didn't want you racing. Your dad didn't.
No, not my parents. No, but it wasn't a money thing. It was they were petrified. They didn't want their kids to get hurt. When I was a kid, I threw a .22 bullet into an incinerator. Back then, we burned all our trash in a 55-gallon barrel. So I was working one day, raking lawns, and seeding them, and fertilizing them, and liming them, and I was covered with lime. I come home and my next door neighbors were throwing firecrackers in the incinerator. So there was a kid up where in the development I was working in. He was taking 22s and banging them on a rock. They'd make a wicked loud noise, you know. So he gave me some. So I come home after work and I get out of my father's truck. I run next door. I can hear the fireworks going off. So I threw one of them 22 bullets in the fire.
No.
And it never went off.
Oh.
So I went over and I looked in, and it went off.
Oh, shit.
And it went right into the brown part of my eye, the colored part of my eye. And I was in the hospital 3 or 4 weeks that trip. I never had never been in a hospital before that. Well, my father beat me up. Wasn't because he was nervous. That's the way them old Italians were, you know?
Yeah, because your family's full Italian.
Yeah.
Right. Did your father immigrate from?
No. Oh. My grandmother and grandfather and maybe an uncle or two, but no, he He was just, if you got hurt, he'd get scared. He'd get scared. Mm. And back then, you used to have to call a doctor, call the answering service. They'd call the doctor. The doctor would call you back. Well, Christ, after 15 minutes of waiting, he'd get on that phone and ream them, blast them. Back then, you could do it, and they'd listen to you, and they'd get something done. Today, they hang up on you.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, that's just the way he was, you know. And, of course, then after that, he brought me in a radio. He brought, you know, he tried to do everything that he could do to make me comfortable, but of course I never was, because I was in fifth grade. I remember, because my fifth grade teacher used to come in and see me almost every day.
Yeah, when you had your eye injury.
Yeah, I couldn't see because I had two patches on my eyes for the whole time I was in there.
You were blind?
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, I was blind because of the patches.
Well, yeah. So you could not see
nothing.
For how long?
3 weeks I laid in there. You know how they used to announce over every single room, Dr. So-and-so, code 99.
Yeah.
That's all I'd hear all night long. Never even been in a hospital. Didn't even know where I was.
That's got to be petrifying.
And that was in Maine Medical Center. And back then, it was only the size of Mercy Hospital. Hmm. Now, you know what I mean? That's how much it's grown since then. I was in the original part of that hospital back then.
Wow, that's terrifying.
Yeah, it was. It was scary. And then he brought me in a radio, so I'd listen to the radio, and the nurses would come down at night and take it up to the nurse station, you know what I mean, because I'd be sleeping. It wasn't fun.
Wow.
But I don't know what we were talking about. But
doesn't matter. That's an incredible story.
Yeah.
You know, so we just talking about your family and how they didn't really want you racing at
right.
first. And then they...
It was fear of me getting hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so then you eventually, you know, get those two modified titles. We've now moved into the pro stocks or late model, whatever, in the early 90s. How did you end up teaming up finally with Dick Fowler? It seems like, you know, you guys were competitors for so long.
Yeah.
And then you finally had that dream team in the 90s.
Mike was going to get done. Mike Johnson was going to, he didn't want to race no more, I guess. It was Mike Johnson's choice.
Mm-hmm.
And Dickie asked me if I'd race for him, with him, and I said, yeah.
And how long have you guys known each other at this point?
Oh, Christ. Years. Years. Yeah,
yeah.
Years.
Yeah. So it made sense.
Yeah, no, it was... Yeah. I never thought it would ever come through, but I was happy when it did, and I had a lot of fun. Those guys were excellent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They were great guys. All smart. Worked hard. Like Roman did and the guys we had when we were racing.
How hard was it to give, did you have to give up any control of your race team to
not
to
really,
be part
no,
of Dickies?
Not really, no. It kind of was the same way it was when I owned, you know, when I was driving my own cars.
Mm.
I was up there when they was working on them. Not doing much, but they'd ask me questions, I'd answer them, but
yeah.
I'd do what I could. I wasn't really... I mean, back then I could do a lot more than I can now, but I wasn't really, I could explain what the car was doing well, mm-hmm. and like Roman, we'd discuss it, and he'd tell me what he wanted to try and why, and then I'd tell him why I thought it wouldn't work, but usually it did, you know what I mean? But that's how I learned, and I didn't have to do that up there. Them guys were all on the ball, you know what I mean? They were sharp.
Yeah.
Dickie's brother was the crew chief. It was just, it was fun. You
get a couple of championships in a couple of years.
Yeah.
How does that dissolve, or how do you guys part ways from that particular era
of
your life?
Well, Dickie's kids were getting older,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they were getting ready to race.
So it was Jason who was coming along.
Yes.
Yeah. So Jason's young kid comes along and he's doing a lot in go-karts and everything. He's a really quick learner through, the Super Sportsman division at, you know, we talked to Dickie on the podcast about Jason. What were some of your memories of young Jason coming up?
Me and Jason were close. Yeah. You know, we really was. We was, I don't know why, but I always had a special place in my heart for him, and he always had one for me. Mm. And I used to go watch him all the time. I was on the police department, and when they were racing go-karts at Beach Ridge, I'd go over with my cruiser, and I'd get out, walk around, talk to the kids, and watch him, you know, watch him, guys. Was almost like my own son, you know what I mean? just had that relationship. And not that I helped him any. I mean, he was pretty sharp. He did a lot. Dickie, you know, taught them kids a lot, you know, and they did most of it on their own. I didn't really have to tell him. I mean, he'd ask me a couple things, and I'd kind of give him some advice, but I never offered it unless he wanted to hear it. And just a good, he was like me, you know, a clown.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Kind of, you know what I mean? So we,
you know it.
Yeah, yeah. So we had, you know, we just hit it off. It was, I didn't know Mikey as well, because I think Mikey went down south for a while. I can't remember, but I wasn't as close to Mikey as I was Jason. Jason was like my own son, you know, kind of. He was going out with my one of my brother's daughters. I
forgot about that.
Yeah, so it was all like a family thing, like I was telling you earlier. And, no, he was just a lot of fun. He was a good guy, good kid.
You come back racing at Beech Ridge probably early 2000s. I know it was the early 2000s, but you come up with Dave Gutter. They've got a car. Or Gary Drew. Who? Like, how did that team come together?
That was Gary Drew.
Yeah.
Dave Gutter was Georgie's uncle. No, Georgie's uncle or cousin. I can't remember. Dave Gutter and Georgie were real close. Dave Gutter helped Georgie a lot while Georgie was racing. And that's how. And Dave, because they grew up right up the street here on Highland Avenue. His father owned the Highland Avenue greenhouses, which I was around my whole life. So Dave was a big help to us. And that was a lot of fun with them guys around and stuff. And then Gary Drew was racing for Rick Lockwood. And Rick Lockwood wanted us, or Mikey and me, or both of us, or something to drive for him. And that was a great deal. I mean, that was a good deal. And we didn't take advantage of it like we should have. But we had a lot of fun with that deal, too.
You had a fast race car.
Yeah,
you
know, the cars were fast, yeah.
Yeah, you were really competitive.
Yeah. And they were nice looking. And he always did it first class.
Yeah.
You know?
Hold on. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, that shut him up.
No, just for a second, though.
Yeah. So, you know, so racing with Lockwood, you had some success in that. Is that the end of your driving days? I think that was the last I remember seeing you race.
I don't know. I can't remember.
Do you remember?
Probably close to it, yeah.
So, you know, you had that success in the early 2000s with Lockwood. And you know, we haven't talked about your son really that much at all, Mikey. Who has had quite a career of his own.
Yeah, Mikey was fun to watch. Yeah, Mikey did a good job.
Do you remember the first time he said to you, "Hey, Dad, I want to do one of these things myself"?
There's some pictures in there when Mikey was real small. You know what I mean? We used to have the car shows in Wyndham. We used to have the car shows at the mall, and Mikey and Maria. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Was always there. I don't remember when he first come up, decided he wanted to do it, but he was around it his whole life.
I think he was one of the first young people to really get into one of those, like, you know, top divisions, like late model. Yeah. Is that did he seek out your advice? Was that hard for him?
Mikey didn't have the help that I had. You know what I mean? He was kind of in Georgie either. I mean, them guys kind of got my hand me downs or whatever you want to call it. Not always, but. I mean, that's the only way you could really afford to do it. And Mikey, I'll tell you one thing. Mikey was my hardest competitor I ever raced with.
Really?
Yeah.
It's quite the compliment to...
He was, but on me, he wouldn't do the stuff to other people he did to me. You know what I mean? But that was a good thing. I mean, we come together a few times and got into some wrecks. And I'd rather have it that way than be... I'd rather have it. I want to see the real thing. I don't want to see make believe. I don't want him to just let me go by.
Yeah.
And he didn't. He was tough. Knock it off. Hey. So knock. I'm the only one they listen to here.
That's
all right.
But Mikey was he was a good driver too. He just never really had the equipment. You know, I feel bad now, but at the time, I don't know. It's just the way it turned out.
Yeah.
There's no good reason why it happened. Maybe I should have, when I get out of it, should have stayed in it and supported him, but it was so expensive.
Why did you get out of it?
I think the police department played a little part in it because I wasn't, I don't know how to say it.
Good.
I wasn't really fulfilling my duties there like I should have been. But I was getting kind of sick of it anyways, you know, the stuff that went along. But I should have supported him probably and kept going. But he got married, and you know what I mean, and then things happened. You just kind of go with the flow that's going on at the time, you know. If he wanted to keep going and was serious about it, we probably would have, you know. I can't answer that why. I mean, I never remember him come crying to me because he wanted to race.
Right.
You know what I mean? I tried to do the right thing, but.
He had his own thing going on. You know, we skip ahead to 2017, and that's, 2016 is when, you know, you get the call for Maine Motorsports Hall of Fame. You know, you're in the class of 2017. Tell me about that night or even that entire experience.
I never knew what to expect because I didn't follow that part of racing ever. Like, I didn't go to nobody else's banquets because I didn't really even know what they were, you know? I didn't care about it.
Okay.
I was still
kind of like podcasting. You didn't know anything about it.
No, yeah. I don't understand it. Like, I've never listened to any of them. And people have put them on my phone, and I just recently, and I still haven't, but I have to. I don't know what it is. I forget or something. I don't know. And
yeah, you and your phone have an interesting relationship.
No, it's awful. I just got a brand new one.
I know.
I'm still trying to get used to it. But, yeah. I don't know. I can't. There's a lot of questions I don't have answers for. I should have probably, but.
But when you stood up on stage and, you know, you were in front of your peers.
It was the best feeling I ever had in my life. It was a sad, sad moment because my parents weren't there. You know what I mean? I mean, we're a very, very close family. Always were.
Had you just lost your dad within the probably within 3 years?
Yeah. And my mother, too. And it was so sad not having them there to see that because I knew how proud they would have been. You know what I mean? My whole life was trying to make my father proud of me. Even you'd never believe it, some of the stuff I pulled. But, you know, that was my goal in life, was to make him proud of me. And I let him down a lot, but, you know what I mean? There was a lot of good times, too, you know, so.
What's your life like today?
It's great. I couldn't ask for a better. I wouldn't change it. I mean, other than my brother being sick, I pray every night that stops happening and he gets better, and he's trying, but it's just that stuff bothers me, always has, and I hate being the age I'm at now when you see all this stuff happening to your relatives, to your, you know what I mean? It's just, I don't know, it's not a, they say your golden years are when you get older. I got an argument for that if somebody ever wants to sit down and listen, but there's nothing fun about getting old. And I'll tell you one thing. I'll say this to everybody that I possibly can. Don't force it. Just let it play out because it's not fun getting old, I tell you.
Don't force what?
Getting old, wishing you were older.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care if you're in school. I couldn't wait to get out of school. I wanted to be older so I could get out of school.
Yeah.
Now I wish I was back in school.
I don't think you would get along with what goes on in school today.
No, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
But, no, it's, no, I can't, I would never change anything. You know, Kathy and I have been together for, I don't even know. I want to say 30 years. I'm probably wrong.
Do you know how you guys met, or do you remember?
Oh.
Kathy, you remember how you guys met?
At Beach Ridge.
At Beach Ridge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't do anything different. Mm-hmm. I really wouldn't, you know. My ex-wife, we all get along. My kids, I was there for my kids, you know. Even after I got divorced, I was there. She was always there. She always has been, and she still is. And
what's a good co-parenting tip? You know, when you lead separate lives, because there are a lot of people that are going through it now, or
I'll
will
tell
be
you,
going
you know,
it.
The fighting and stuff. When I was younger, I used to think that was the way to do it, but it isn't. Mm. You know, you got to think of your kids. You're very selfish if you do stupid stuff because you're upset because something happened. The bottom line is your kids. Them should be number one. And they were, you know, for her and me. I hear so many horror stories about these people get divorced, their wife's out in the bar room every night. And my wife's ex-wife stayed home with the kids, did everything for the kids, worked, you know, and that's the way it should be. Anybody can fight. You can be a moron and fight. You know what I mean? You don't have to be.
Takes a real man to.
That's right.
Or a real woman,
right.
Real human.
But it's hard. When I was younger, I was jealous.
Drop the ego. And
wicked jealous.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself today, why was I jealous? You know what I mean? It's just, it's part of life. It's part of growing up. And I guess it's how you're raised. Hmm. You watch your own parents and you think that's the way to do it, even though my parents never drank. Yeah. Never drank a drop.
Yeah. You haven't drank in quite some time.
No, I haven't drank for a year and a half, two years.
Good for you.
And I feel so much better. I don't know. I think everything I've done in life, I have no regrets, you know. There's very few things I'd change if I could. But, you know, my kids are healthy. You know, when everybody's healthy, life is great with me. That's the way I look at it. As long as everybody's healthy. I hate hearing people getting sick. Especially relatives, but it's even hard with your friends, you know. Mm-hmm. I've lost a lot of friends,
yeah.
You know, over the years, and it sucks.
I want to thank Mike Maietta again for just being awesome and being as open as he was on Open Trailer. He took the Open and Open Trailer podcast about as far as it's been. I think that would even one-up Ralph Nason. So, Mike was a great personality, but speaking of personality, the next person on the show is full of it. Going with the Dirty Lou, stage number one, next week, next time on Open Trailer Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Austin. Have a good one.